this is Connie Hunter, KCIW, Community Conversations. And today, our special guest is Alyssa Babin. And Alyssa, she stood too long, and we talked her into becoming one of our advisory board members right here at KCIW. And so she's going to help us understand what we need for programming for environmental issues. But let's start at the very beginning where we talk about your upcoming event, which I'm so excited. It's a film festival. You want to tell us about that? Welcome.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Connie. I appreciate being on the air with you here today. So the film festival started with the South Yuba River Conservation League. That's what they're called, pronounced Circle. So they started in Nevada City, California. Have you ever been to Nevada City?
I actually got married in Nevada
City. Okay, so you know, it's a really cool old mining town.
Yes.
And they have some really beautiful rivers there as well, like we do here. And so their community was so inspired by their rivers that they started this film festival about the river that they loved, the South Yuba River. So that has been going on for 32 years, the South Yuba River Conservation League, and they started this national program. So it's an extremely professional, put-together program. It consists, the one that we're showing is called Our Waters, and it consists of 9 short films. So the longest film, I think, is 24 minutes long, and the shortest one is 6 minutes long. So it's about 120 minutes of short films, and these films are what I'm calling, they inspire to activate. So you will watch them and you will laugh and cry. They're beautiful films. So I'll tell you a little bit about a couple of them and why they're so exciting that they're here with us in Brookings on the 28th. So 2 of the films feature local rivers. So one of them is called Eternally Wild, and it was made with the Smith River Alliance.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
Yeah, so the Smith River Alliance has been around for a long time, protecting the Smith, helping to get the Redwood National Park started. And so Grant Werschkel from the Smith River Alliance actually is going to be at the film festival to talk about that film and to inspire people to help protect the Smith River. So that's the first local film that we have. The second one is called Emerald Waters of the Klamath Siskiyou, Wild Rivers at Risk. Well, it's kind of a long film title, but I remembered it, so yay!
That's amazing, yeah. Emerald Waters, boy, isn't that
Emerald Waters is,
oh my gosh.
And it really is. So that one's about nickel mining opposition in the area and features some local activists who have been working really hard with the Southwestern Oregon Watershed and Salmon Protection Act. So the filmmaker from Emerald Waters is also going to be here. So, and I have a special connection. My mom, she works with the Ashland Film Festival. She's the person in charge at the Ashland Film Festival of interviewing filmmakers during the Q&A. So she's going to come and interview the filmmaker from Emerald Waters.
Oh, what a gift that'll be.
So yeah, so she knows exactly what to say and how to keep the conversation engaged. So not only are we having these two really amazing and inspiring films about our local area. I mean, this is a national program. It's been shown all over the country. It's been shown in Seattle, all over California, Chicago, never before in Oregon.
Wow. This is a world premiere.
It's a world premiere. Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic.
In little old Brookings.
That's fantastic.
You know, we get a world premiere, which is, you know, you believe it, you can achieve it kind of thing. I just really wanted to see it happen here, and it's going to be, there's so many more amazing things I want to tell you about, so do you want me to just...
Well, let me ask you one quick question. Where do you get all your energy to do all this, and do you ever sleep? Anyway, and just take it from there. It's so inspiring to talk with you.
Well, I get my inspiration from inspiring people like you, Connie, so I think we probably just feed off of each other.
Takes one to know one.
You know, and that's how it happens, yeah.
But you have that love of the earth, and you have that relationship with Brookings and this beautiful area. You want to talk a little bit about that and then go on?
Sure, yeah. So I think that, so I started this nonprofit in 2012, but didn't really get off the ground until 2014. I wasn't really ready to really work hard on it. It was sort of just in the background of my mind for the first couple of years of its inception. So we got our formation, our 501c3 status in 2014. So the reason that I formed the nonprofit, I grew up in Brookings. I'm a native of Curry County. I'm a third generation Oregonian. My grandparents ran the pilot for a really long time, for over 30 years. So when I was growing up, you know, and to this day, I think to our community, there's a really strong sense of place in Curry County. And we have this wild places culture, is what I'm calling it, where, you know, even across, everyone loves and respects our wild places. You're not a leftist environmentalist here to love and respect your wild place. You're an average citizen. And I think that sort of ethos that we have in Brookings is something that's unique. There's a lot of people who have pride of place for their community and their culture based on a community understanding of food, music. I don't think that there's that many places on earth where people unite around their love for the place that they live. So when people talk about why do you live in Brookings, people say, because it's beautiful here. That's what unites us. And I was really, that's just how I grew up thinking, you know. And I spent a lot of summers at my grandparents' cabin on the Chetco doing water ballet with my grandma, making hobo burgers, fishing with my grandpa, you know, smoking salmon, kayaking the Wild Rogue, spending time at Jedediah on the Smith. So I think, and those are just common. I think that a lot of kids growing up here experience all those things. And so that really formed my sense of place. And I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go to college. So I went to Lewis and Clark and I got a degree in environmental science. Lewis and Clark helped me to shape that passion that I had for environmental issues. And then I moved to San Francisco, did rare plant management for a while in the Presidio, working with the rare and endemic species in Presidio. So I got to learn how to appreciate habitat, what we need to do to create habitat, and the steps to take to do habitat restoration. So I went to law school. And so I learned about how you can use law to affect change. And all three of those experiences sort of combined to inspire me to form the nonprofit. So what I say is that we want to do community change through education and advocacy work. We really love working with kids in the community and holding events like the film festival, where it's just an opportunity for all of us to get together and realize, you know, what we have and how important it is to keep it that way.
Celebrate that sense of place.
Yes.
And I think that's just a beautiful way to put it.
When you're
connected to the earth and to the place that you live, to me, it's a sacred part of who I am. And there are some days when maybe I don't even look out the window and see the ocean because I'm so busy. And then when I actually take the time to sit down at the end of the day and pause, I think, how could I have not looked out the window at that ocean view? You know, just so connected. So do you want to talk more about the film festival? Because I also want to talk about, at some point, your work with the Redwoods and your trip to Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Finish up about the film festival.
So, okay, let's see. Two local films. It's May 28th at the Kite Field at the port. So Kite Field is on Boat Basin Road. So, you kind of, instead of turning left to go into where Sport Haven Beach is, you kind of just continue right on the road there, and that will take you to the Kite Field where the Kite Festival is held every year. So it's going to be there. We have a 20-foot projector screen. So Relay for Life is a huge partner, and they use this inflatable screen at their event at the high school track every year. So we're going to use that projector screen and some tents from Relay for Life to set up this really beautiful outdoor screening event. We have a solid program. Before the film program begins at 8, we're going to have a meet and mingle sort of time of about an hour. And during that time, we're featuring two local, as in people from Brookings, filmmakers.
Oh, wow. Tell us about them.
Yeah, so Rob Lovell is going to be there with his movies about the Chetco. He does these really cool underwater movies. And he also has a submarine, which is a completely different topic. But anyways.
How interesting.
I know, right? So, yeah. So he takes these really beautiful films showing salmon swimming up the river and just the unique natural values of the Chetco. And then Aaron Moffat is also coming to show. So he does these. He uses a drone to shoot aerial footage of the beautiful forests of the region. So both of them will be there. And it'll be just like informal, you know, there'll be some local businesses tabling during that time, and you know, I'll be there if you want to talk to me, although more exciting people than me to talk to there. We'll have a representative from American Rivers coming from Portland, another person from Pacific Rivers coming from Portland, hoping to get someone from KS Wild to be there, so it'll just be sort of like a fun time to hang out. And then the films start at 8 and they'll go until about, I think it's going to be right at 8:45, maybe 9:15, depending on how much time we take with the filmmakers and, you know, the Q&A session of the event. So it's actually right as it gets dark, you know, we're going to have this beautiful film. The projector screen will be over the Chetco River. The film starts right as the sun sets, and it'll be like this magical, wonderful experience. We'll all cry and laugh together for an hour and 15 minutes.
You know what? You are so amazingly engaging. And I'm glad you brought up American Rivers and Pacific Rivers. Mm-hmm. When we had lunch one day and we were talking about American
Who,
Rivers.
You and me?
Yeah, you and I did. Yes, you and I.
Oh, we have no. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we did. We did. After a League of Women Voters event. And we were talking and Alyssa was talking a little bit about some of the wonderful things that she's involved with, and she had made a report at League of Women Voters meeting that she had been to Washington, D.C. about the Redwoods, and then we talked about American Rivers and things like that. And coincidentally, I'm going to try and get some of those CDs because I worked I worked for a record label at Narada, and we actually did a fundraising CD. A compilation of music to so that American Rivers could sell that, and a portion of the proceeds goes to support their efforts. So that was a fun project to work on, and with that compilation, it really that sense of place was a huge piece of what we wanted to convey in that CD. Mm. And we had multiple artists donate music to be used. But then we had to figure out how to make those all work together. And we were able to get Carlos Nakai, who's a fantastic Native American flautist, to tie everything together. And I just, I can't wait to meet the folks from American Rivers and see them.
Oh,
but I'll
awesome.
Try and make sure we get some CDs out there.
I remember you showing me. I think we watched a YouTube video of Carlos Nakai's music together.
That's right.
Yeah. So
I'm
excited
about this event.
Me too.
And I like how you say this, a change of course. You know, you're really steering the change here.
Yeah,
Alyssa, and thank you for that.
It's a collaborative effort, you know, and I think it's important that we all work together and listen to each other's voices. And I'm all about listening and collaborating, you know, and having non-traditional partners. I love to partner with people that you wouldn't expect would partner with a conservation organization. So, you know, South Coast, Freeman Rock, the League of Women Voters, the Pacific Coast Fishermen's Association. So I am looking for both traditional and non-traditional collaborative people to work with. So that's super
and guess
important
what?
To me.
That's why we wanted you on our advisory board for KCIW, because you can teach us some things.
Because I'm so connected. I'm still building my network. Networking is, I mean, I don't think people who don't network really know how hard it is.
It's a lot of work. We just came from the Wild Rivers Connect, the nonprofit Leaders Lunch.
Yeah.
Where you made a great presentation.
Oh, thank you, Connie. You're so sweet. Yeah. You make me feel so good all the time.
But, you know, it's the truth. I'm not I don't fluff, you know. the bottom line is I am so proud of the work that you do. And so now let's talk about the Redwoods.
Let's talk about, yeah, the trip to Washington, D.C. and the Redwoods. So
you had fun there?
I got to go to Washington, D.C. Yeah. Well, I had some fun. I don't know about how much havoc I wreaked. Hopefully a little bit, you know. It's always good to be a little bit of a troublemaker. So the Geos Institute is trying to work to protect the Oregon Redwoods. So right now, I'll just start from the beginning. So we have redwoods in Oregon, first of all. A lot of people don't realize that. There's actually quite a bit of acreage. And there's actually a contest going right now to find out where the northernmost and easternmost redwoods are. So you can find out about that at wildandscenicrivers.org, our redwoods contest. So there's Oregon redwoods. They're right now currently, most of the non-planted redwoods in Oregon are on federal land, so part of the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. There's two pretty much distinct groves that most people know about. One's right off the Chetco River, and then there's Peavine Ridge, which is off the Winchuck, and there's a couple of other little spitter spatters of redwoods along the Winchuck River as well. So this is the Oregon Redwoods Project, I think, is a really great time to bring awareness to the Winchuck River, because people don't go to the Winchuck as much as the Chetco or the Smith, and that's where most of the redwoods are.
You know what? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You taught me something.
Yes.
Do. Tell me
There's
more.
There's this beautiful campground that you can go to right across from, I think it's just called the Winchuck River Campground. And you can camp and look across the river at one of the largest patches of old growth redwoods in Oregon. So these are some really beautiful places. Redwoods, to me, are the iconic image of sacred place, right? They're some of the oldest living things on the earth. There's redwoods that have been around and seen things that we can't even imagine. You know, to me, there's just this sort of, there's an awe that I get when I think about that. It makes me have chills. They're very inspirational and spiritual trees. You know, I think that that's anyone who goes to the redwoods really has that experience, you know, with the trees.
I had that experience, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm glad you said the word sacred there, because I'm going to bring up something very personal right now.
Oh, good. Yeah.
My son passed mm-hmm. away, you know that.
Yes.
I put his ashes at the Avenue of the Giants, with the redwood trees,
yes.
but because of the name, the Avenue of the Giants. And so that thing that is most sacred to me, and even though I grew up in Arizona, I have a love of the forest, and my parents used to take me to northern Arizona. So when I decided that I was going to move to northern California and then ultimately to southern Oregon, mm-hmm. I just felt like the redwoods were that
they
sacred
They called
place.
You.
Yes,
yeah.
ma'am. I'm glad you put it exactly that way. So anyway, thank you for reminding us about how important that is. And
yes.
are they at risk,
Alyssa? So yes. So thank you for that segue, Connie. They are. So they're part of the National Forest. So the National Forest is managed under this document called the Northwest Forest Plan. The Northwest Forest Plan was put into place by Bill Clinton when he was president. And so far it's existed through, three presidencies. However, it is a presidential guiding document, and at any time, our next president could just decide that they didn't want the Northwest Forest Plan anymore and could create a whole new management document for all of our forests. So as long as the redwoods stay in that Northwest Forest Plan, they could be potentially logged. And to me, the value of the last remaining redwoods in Oregon, the northernmost boundary, what people are calling, so as the climate shifts, the southern edge of the redwoods are being pushed out, right? It's getting warmer. The climate isn't compatible with their ecosystem. So they're moving north. The redwoods are moving north. As they continue to move north, the northernmost edge is what's going to be called a climate refuge. And redwoods have been recognized as a key ecosystem moving forward. as the climate shifts as well. So not only are these trees important for their sacred values in our hearts and minds, you know, our sense of place, our spiritual well-being, but they're also important climate ecosystems. So under the Northwest Forest Plan, they're not permanently protected. So we can permanently protect them in a variety of ways, but we're focusing right now on two ways. So either federal protection in some form. And one of those is the Oregon Redwoods National Recreation Area, which would be a document that the Oregon delegation, which is our Oregon senators and representatives, would present to Congress, and they could pass, and then the redwoods would be permanently protected, still probably managed by the Forest Service, but similar protection to what's happening right now with the Redwoods National Parks. And then on top of that, also, if we permanently protected the Oregon Redwoods, right now people drive through Brookings to go see the redwoods. You know, they stay the night in our hotels, but then they go down to California to spend their dollars and do their tourism activities. If we had more visibility and more awareness as to our natural values, and we're able to promote those, we could bring more tourism opportunities to Brookings. Not only that, but there's a huge campaign, the Wild Rivers Coast campaign. Recreation and ecotourism are the driving forces of our economy. The more things that we can do to create more opportunities for people to recreate in our community, the better off we're going to be economically in the long run. So along with increased federal protection for the Oregon Redwoods, there's going to be increased federal dollars coming to our community to support these protected places. That is another thing that I think is really important. Not only that, but local business people also support this. You know, this is a community effort. I have 35 local businesses who have signed on to support the project, and that's as of today, and I get more every day. I'm talking with people, having this conversation. Everyone's like, of course we want to protect these redwood trees. You know, we love the redwoods. It's a no-brainer. Why haven't we done this before? It's kind of like that, you know?
It's kind of like somebody had to take the gauntlet and really be able to articulate how important stewardship of the land and of our natural resources, of the redwoods in particular in this conversation, to really paint that picture. What does stewardship look like? What can we do?
Right.
Stewardship
exactly.
is going to Washington, D.C. and talking
yep.
to people.
Going to our legislators, telling them about what we want from them. They work for us, you know, and that's exactly stewardship. And there's other stewardship things that we can do for the redwoods as well, like really simple, easy things. Like when you go to the redwoods, bring a bag, and if you find a piece of trash, pick it up. You know,
and stewardship all across the board.
Yeah.
Just the other day, they had a press conference, and it was the gentleman who is the secretary of the USDA. Did you listen to that press conference?
I did. You were in the press conference.
Well, we could call in. Well, the interesting thing about it was they had the chief of the U.S. Forest Service on as well.
Very important person
talking
for
about
the
fire preparation for the fire season for 2016. And last year was a record-breaking fire season where they spent $2.6 billion on fire suppression. And, of course, we know that there has to be some funding for what? Management of the forest, and really it's kind of like that the point is that the solution costs costs less than the problem.
Right.
So the funding, the way that the funding is, 52% is going for fire suppression.
I mean, that's a huge portion of a federal agency's budget. I don't think that any other federal agency spends that much of their budget on one thing.
Well, and the interesting thing about it is because of the need there, they've had to take money away from, for example, hosting at campgrounds.
Right.
And then the forest maintenance.
And enforcing like enforcing river rules, right?
That's right.
River bar rules.
All of that.
Campgrounds have been closing. Exactly. So the Forest Service, you know, just to bring it back to this really important point, I was a wildland firefighter. I don't know if you knew that, but in college I was a wildland firefighter.
No, I did not.
Yeah. I worked on the Biscuit Fire, the largest fire in Oregon's recorded history.
I remember the Biscuit.
So I have some insider knowledge as to the Forest Service, and I have a lot of respect and appreciation for that organization. But as they struggle with their budgetary issues and the people on the ground here, like the district ranger is the person that's suffering because they want to do all these things and they can't. And so I think that if we were able to, you know, move the jurisdiction, get some more federal dollars here to protect these places, we should totally be doing that. We should be making every effort we can to bring in as much money as we can to Curry County. That's how I see it.
And the bottom line is we need to make sure
doing it in a sustainable way.
Exactly. You know? And speaking to our elected officials, making sure, I mean, bottom line is if Congress doesn't fund, it's because we're not asking them to fund.
Yes.
So we have to have our voices. And so part of what the Wild and Scenic River Film Festival is about is to create that advocacy where we can
Where we can make change in our communities, right?
And affect public policy.
Affect public policy, yes.
At the federal level,
yes.
So we can get those dollars.
And, you know, I think that what's something that I think we're really blessed that we have a lot of federal lands in Curry County because those lands are being held for the public and in the public's interest. And we have a government that is supposed to be working for us. And Washington, D.C. is all the way across the country, right? So I think that the people in Virginia, for example, you know, might have their voices heard a little bit more because all they have to do is cross the bridge to go to the Capitol, but we have to cross the country. I think it makes it a little bit more difficult strategically for us to have our voices heard. But our elected officials are here all the time and listening. You know, I've been to town halls with Senator Merkley and DeFazio, Wyden, and they're listening. They want to know what we have to say and what, you know, we want to protect. And they need to hear about the Oregon Redwoods as well. And, you know, we'll be I'm sure asking people to raise their voices, you know, as a passionate, collaborative body of people working to protect these places in the future.
Now, are you going to have materials at the film festival where people can maybe have a chance to know, like, who do they contact?
Yeah.
You know, who do you write to? What kind of things would you want?
All those things. We'll have so many materials, Connie.
So just, good your tools mind of advocacy.
Your mind will be blown with them.
advocacy. I love it.
Yeah, Kyle Ashby with American Rivers is really promoting the mineral withdrawal and aid of legislation right now. And so he'll be here with a bunch of materials for that. And then Wild and Scenic Rivers will have all of our materials there. There'll be materials about the Oregon Redwoods. And if there's anybody else who wants to have who listens to this podcast and wants to have a booth at the festival, let me know. And we'll get you set up because we have, you know, we have room for community groups to come out and get support. So
like maybe KCIW.
Like KCIW. Wink, wink.
Well, you know, I know we're going to have to wrap it up really quickly, but I can't end this without you talking a little bit about nickel mining and the study and a little bit about that.
Well, so I'm not the leader of the charge for the advocacy end of the nickel mining opposition. That would be Kyle Ashby from American Rivers, Anvil Isis from Kalamazoo Audubon, Dave Lacey and Mark Sherwood from Native Fish Society, and Barbara Ulian from Friends of the Kalamazoo. So I think that but what I am involved in is the League of Women Voters is doing a hard rock mining study, which, so I'm the chair, the League of Women Voters of Oregon, not Curry County. The League of Women Voters of Oregon is doing a study on the hard rock mining in Oregon, its environmental costs and benefits, the impacts to the community of nickel mining, and any benefits to the community. And that is, so we're working on that right now. And that will be slated for publication on April 1st, 2017.
Wow. And what they're looking at is the impact of nickel mining. Does that impact our rivers too?
Yeah. So basically, just really quickly, so the Formosa mine outside of Riddle, Oregon is a federal Superfund site, which means it's one of the most toxic and polluted places in the country. You have to be really bad to get on that list.
Wow.
So that's a nickel mine in Oregon, the only nickel mine in Oregon. And it's a horrible mess. And there's this corporation that has done exploratory drilling and wants to mine for nickel in our region. And basically, there's a community of support that's saying, hell no, don't mine here.
Outcry, yes.
Yeah. So that's where that comes from. And so the League, as a nonpartisan group, is studying both sides of the issue, talking with geologists, biologists, you know, people involved in the nickel mining movement, and the people who are involved in the people who want to do the nickel mining, the miners. So we're getting a balanced perspective, and we're going to come out with a recommendation for the National League of Women Voters to advocate for in Washington D.C. So that will be another advocacy, federal advocacy tool that we will have to use after that happens. And it makes my head spin a little bit thinking about that because I have so much work to do on that. I'm going to get you to help me somehow, Connie. So
well,
just wait
you
for
know,
that because that's coming up next.
things are going to be such that, you know, we can support your efforts.
Thank
also
you.
Through KCIW. Remember that, you know, once we're on the air and we're expecting to be on the air in the middle of July.
So exciting.
We can really help with getting that message out. And that's why I'm so grateful that you decided that you would be willing to serve on our advisory board, which doesn't have a lot of meetings, but you can advise us on the kinds of things that we should be paying attention to
definitely.
With environmental issues.
Yeah.
So thank you again for
and
that.
And creative input. You know,
Oh, yes. You've got the creative input thing going on. That's for sure.
I think I've got that. Let me just plug the event one more time.
Okay, super.
So the Wild and Scenic Film Festival happening May 28th, the Kite Field at the Port of Brookings Harbor. The mingles at 7 p.m. The film start at 8. Tickets are general admission, $10. Relay for Life members are $7. And you can get tickets online at Brown Paper Tickets. It's bpt.me/2549565 bpt.me/2549565 And if anyone has any questions, they can contact me 415-786-3304 or Alyssa AlyssaBabin at gmail.com.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Connie.
I haven't seen you so much in one day for a while. It's just a real blessing.
It's been really nice to hang out with you. Yeah.
see you soon, and let's make sure that we get a KCIW booth out there and support your efforts. And
thank you.
Let us know what we can do. Because
thank you so much.
We love our place, and we value the things that are sacred about our land.
Yes, thank you so much, Connie.
Thank you for being not only outspoken, but just so willing to roll up your sleeves and be that advocate that steers the change. And
thank
you for that, Alyssa.
Thank you for doing the same.
Well, let's get off before we cause any more trouble. Thanks again, Alyssa.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.